So after our conversation, Mark, I went out and imported this absolutely ridiculous German release of Hard Target. Okay, like four discs. I already own it on UK and US. But this one includes the 2 hour and 10 minute work print. I know, and the greatest thing about it is it's even worse quality than the sneak peek. But it's 10 minutes longer. It's fantastic. Hello and welcome to the AV Forum's Movies and TV Podcast for September 2024. Tonight, I'm joined by Simon Crust.
Is it September?
Is it? And Mark Costello.
Happy soon to be October, everyone.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. That's how I feel. For our September Movies and TVs podcast, we'll be offering up a top 10 list of recommended watches for September. Still September.
Like Rolex and Seiko.
And then we'll deep dive into our topic of the month. Work prints, the holy grail for movie fans.
More on that later.
Yeah, or is it exactly, or is just a dirty bootleg zone for pirates? Who knows? First, let's take a look at some competitions. Well, we got a bunch of competitions. The heavy hitters are win an LG Cinebeam Q projector worth £1,000.
Nice.
Portable 4K projector with wireless connectivity for streaming, movie watching and gaming wherever you want. Closing date is 11:59 p.m. Tuesday the 15th of October 2024. And you can also win £500 to spend with MPB, the largest global platform to buy, sell and trade in used photo and video gear. The closing date for that is 11:59 Thursday the 24th of October. Competitions open to eligible AV Forums members over 18 who are resident in the UK. So head over to avforums.com/competitions to enter. There's also a bunch of exclusives, some Patreon exclusives, and I just unleashed today Nikita 4K steelbook. And I gotta say, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous steelbook. They've done spot metallic gloss in her eyes on the steelbook cover, which is
wow,
a fantastic touch for any steelbook. And I rarely get excited because Xavi have ruined me. I rarely get excited about steelbooks anymore. So when I opened it,
a month of Orca, Kaz.
Yeah, I got the Orca prize. I think it's around here somewhere. I don't really want to show it on TV. Oh, no, I do have
That'll just put people off. Here.
Look at
I mean, blimey.
That is a contender for Tomatoes Award for Steelbook Design right there.
Can't imagine why you fell out of love with steelbooks, Kaz.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But the Nikita one is gorgeous, and I really love it. There's that, and I just put up Hitcher, the Hitcher, Big Fat Hitcher.
Oh, Big Fat Hitcher.
Oh,
yeah, that's a film that I'm making.
Yeah, you can win Big Fat Hitcher, the massive box with the same content as the standard release, but it's a big box. I mean, that's one to look at. Right, best things we've watched in September. Why did I put Agatha in here, Mark?
Yeah, I have no idea. Cass. Okay.
It was the best thing watched.
It bloody wasn't. But anyway, I did watch it. And do you know what?
Episode two was better than one.
Yeah, I mean, coming off the back of The Acolyte, you know, you could argue that this is the MCU's The Acolyte from... Well, it's easy enough to surmise that going off all the trailers and the pre-release hysteria from the usual crowd online. And to some extent, they're right. It is very much, it's as camp as Christmas. It's Hocus Pocus meets The Craft meets... Well, your worst nightmare kind of thing. But having said all that, I like Catherine Hahn. She's great. Aubrey Plaza zings with her quite nicely. And despite a redundant first episode, they've got all the backstory out of the way, all the setup out of the way now for the first two episodes. They're now on the Witch's Road being pursued by the Salem Seven. I don't know what those
words. These are all meaningless words.
I've seen it, Si, and they're still meaningless to me. But it's, you know, I'm going to stick with it because it's bright, it's breezy, it's chirpy, and plus I love Hocus Pocus and The Craft. So, you know, I'm in for some witchy fun.
Okay. Well,
that made the top 10.
Terminator
not my,
Zero.
Not my top 10.
Terminator Zero went in there. A lot of negative feedback for that. I had a lot of fun with it. It's very quirky in places, but it's also very violent, pretty stylish, and some nice kind of back to basics Terminatoring, which we haven't had for a good long while. You know, a nice relatively back to basics Terminator story with a relatively back to basics Terminator who isn't made of nanoparticles or able to turn into vapor. So, yeah. I quite enjoyed it. So,
seen the first episode of that. Seems okay so far.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's because it's a Netflix TV show, goes a bit off the rails in terms of what they feel they need to put into it, rather than just being as relentlessly intense as I'd say the first couple of episodes are.
So what you mean is it's Netflix as usual, it's twice as long as it needs to be.
The plot they put in to make it longer is contrived, maybe. It does make sense, but it's a bit contrived. They do a lot of that. But anyway, I enjoyed it. There's a lot of middling feedback on there, but I enjoyed it. And as Terminator products go, I'd see more like this. I'd prefer more like this than they keep hammering us with something at this a big screen, which doesn't quite sit. And they can tell smaller scale stories. And I think that that's
a big risk. Just tell us a different story.
Yeah, well, this is a different take on. Anyway, it's worth checking out.
Cool.
Cuckoo, Hunter Schafer. This is Till. Who's the guy who did Lutz, Mark?
Oh, I can't remember.
Oh, man, what are we doing to ourselves? Anyway.
Yeah. Lutz was great, though. Flower of Evil, it was brilliant.
Till Singer. Tillman Singer. He did Lutz. And... he's done Cuckoo, and it's crazy. It's crazy. Nice.
Want to see that?
It's worth checking out. I would say that if you reviewed it, Mark, you would say it doesn't go quite crazy enough. It doesn't. It's like
I probably would.
It's like it's got some crazy in there, and the final act is a bit gonzo. But you almost wish the whole movie had been gonzo rather than teasing us with something creepy going on and then going gonzo at the end. I mean,
fair dues.
It's quite obvious that something weird is going on.
But having said that, Dan Stevens in the trailer has sold me instantly. He's having a blast.
He is having a great time in his career. He's like, they phone him up and they go, Dan, can you do what you did in that movie again? Just a bit more crazy. And he's like, sure. Sticks his fingers in some sockets, goes to work.
Exactly. It's a bit dull, isn't it, Dan? Can you just come and do some of your freaky deaky shit? Yeah. Come on, just come and do your usual.
I'll be there
in a jiffy.
Imagine if they hired him to do something like straight, like James Bond. We'll have Dan Stevens as James Bond. He'd be like, well, can I do something a bit different with the role? Anyway, here he's...
Yeah, but the final reveal would be that Bond is Blofeld in that case.
Yes, yes. And plays a flute.
Which I'd be here for.
Chaos. Jeff Goldblum. Mythology reworked for 2024. And it works. I really enjoyed that. I think I'm one episode from the end. Jeff Goldblum's what you'll go in there to watch because he's very, very compelling at the outset. He's Zeus. But it is a madcap story. It's worth sticking with. It's not bad from Netflix. I'd watch more of that. Cool. Speak No Evil was better than you thought, James McAvoy.
Yeah, a lot better than I thought. If you haven't seen the Danish original from a couple of years back, I think you'll have a much better time with this. It's skin crawling. It's a thriller, a horror of manners, of social etiquette and niceties. And for those of us that would, you know, go out of our way to risk not offending anyone, even if we don't know them, this is your worst nightmare. McAvoy in this is immense. He is even bigger in this than he was in Split and Glass. Honestly, he's an absolute animal, but he's brilliant in it. And even though I'm kind of disappointed in the ending wussed out compared to the original, went all a little bit. I mean, I said in the review, went a little bit peckinpah, which in itself is usually a good thing. But here, it ain't. but it still kind of works. So a really, really solid film. And I think the only people who will be disappointed in this are those that are madly in love with the original. So definitely worth seeing. Better than... I mean, when you hear they're remaking a film that is 2 years old, you kind of go, oh, dear God. But, you know, it's a lot better than it had any right to be. So, yeah, go and see it. It's good.
Well, The Crow didn't make the top 10, and that's remaking a film that's like 30 years old. Yeah,
We're not mentioning The Crow.
No, we're not going to talk about The Crow. Yeah. Well, if we did, it would not be about that crow. The Penguin. So The Penguin, I wanted to place it higher in the list. I mean, this isn't really a list order, but it's a cracking start. Really, I've
not seen it yet. I'm going to wait for a few more to come out.
It's a great first episode. It's a great first episode that you can watch without going, you will want to watch more, but you don't go, oh yeah, they're going to leave the rest for later. It really sets the scene. Colin Farrell is, I mean, he really owns this role. I hear he hated doing every minute of it because of the suit, how heavy it is, how sweaty it is, having to affect the accent, the whole thing. My God, well, he commits. He is unrecognizably the Penguin, and I had a lot of fun with it. I didn't have
a good time with the Batman. I thought it was
I don't think it matters.
I was just going to say, all right then?
If you read the comments, there's a selection of comments that go from love the Batman, can't wait for more in this universe, which will work. Mm.
Yeah.
And to hated the Batman, but Colin Farrell was the best thing about it, which will also work. So
cool.
Even if you didn't get on with the Batman, I did. But if you didn't, if you liked what Colin Farrell brought to that role in the film, which was a very un-Danny DeVito, very un-camp Penguin, then you'll like this. He's
cool.
He's great in it. It's a very nicely written thing as well. It's kind of, I don't know, there's a bit of early Tony Soprano. There's a bit of clumsiness and vulnerability, which you don't normally associate with, you know, tough gangsters. And it's nicely done.
Cool.
And it's DC, and DC seem to be terrible at movies, but occasionally, you know, do a Peacemaker or something, or do a standout TV show, whereas Marvel, well, at least in the past, used to be better at movies than DC, maybe not anymore. And then used to do, you know, slightly wavering TV shows. Anyway, how the tide has turned. Sherwood is an odd entry. I included it, even though it's not September in any way, shape or form. I included it because it's mostly a shout out to the fact that if it wasn't for the slightly dull, disappointing second season, which did recently drop, you would not have got around to actually watching the 9 out of 10 first season.
Yeah, no, very, very true. This is not my wheelhouse at all. This is my wife's wheelhouse. All these bloody miserable grey kitchen sink murder mysteries that clog up the streaming platforms. Jesus, this could not have been further from what I would. I'd rather stick pins in my eyes, quite frankly. So yeah, I missed this. However, gentle prodding from Herr Fuhrer Harlow, and actually I was really pleased that I did watch it. The first season, I thought the second season dropped, but given that it included a lot of the same characters from the first, my OCD meant I had to go back and watch the first series before, and quite frankly it was fantastic. In a nutshell, it's a murder mystery set against the backdrop of an ex-mining village in Nottinghamshire that's fractured beyond all repair because of the miners' strike from 40 years ago. It's dour, it's grim, it's depressing. There's not a smile cracked or a joke made across all of its six episodes, but by God, it was really good. The murder mystery quickly resolves itself and it becomes a why done it rather than a who done it. But the writing beautifully places all these questions in the characters from their background, from the community. And before you know it, it's this beautiful patchwork of character, of community, of plot, of story, of narrative. And there's even a beautiful little kick of an ending as well that you can't, that, you know, if you saw it in a film, you'd go, oh, that's a nice little twist, nice little sting in the tail. And so I absolutely loved the first series. It's on iPlayer now. If you haven't seen it, because like me, it looks like any one of those faceless, bloody streaming fodder. honestly, give it a go. And whatever you do, do not watch the second series. Just leave it as a one and
leave
done.
Leave it as the first.
Leave it as a cool. one and done. We'll talk about the second series at a later date. But yeah, that first series, it's six episodes. That's all it is. But it's brilliant. Go see it.
I mean, I think you summed it up with do not watch the second series. I'm not sure. Not sure we need to talk about that anymore. That's quite.
It won't make the top 10 list in October unless October is a really? Real stinker.
Slow Horses is back. I love
Yay.
It.
I love Slow Horses.
It's got to be one of the best things I'm watching on TV, to the point where I watched the first episode of the new season. I got it on Apple Preview, and I went, you know what? I'm going to go back and rate up all of my reviews of previous Slow Horses, because I'd only given them all eights. And I was like, this is one of the best shows
you can
currently watch. And even if it's not perfect, and even if really, if you were being some kind of objective freak rather than us all biased freaks, you would look at it and go, yeah, there's no way that's nine. You know, this is unbelievable and this is flabby and whatever. The reality is it's some of the best TV that I've seen in a long time, and consistently good. Every time you come back to it, you know, I could just watch more of Gary Oldman's role. So I gave him all nines just across the board.
Nice.
Even the slightly weaker third season. But I've had a ball, and it's back, and he's just as great as ever. I think he texts to let everybody know that there's been a serious death. I mean, it's just typical Gary Oldman. It's like he just dropped a text. That's worth getting on with. It's the only shame I think about Slow Horses is that it's only ever like six episodes, which is perfect.
It is perfect,
but you never want it to end that quickly. You never want it to. And the plus side is that it's perfect in terms of how taut it is, never outstays its welcome, and they seem to churn out one like every 9 months. So
exactly.
That is much better than an 8 or 10 episode season, one every 2 years.
Absolutely.
So I'm glad they're doing it. And they got Source Novels. I think they got seven. They got seven to work with. They've only greenlit one more season, but I'm really hoping that they know this is one of Gary Oldman's absolute career highlights, and he should just keep doing them. Blink Twice. Blink Twice is the directorial debut of Zoe Kravitz, and I pretty much dismissed it because it was originally called Pussy Island, and because it was directed by Zoe Kravitz, who I don't know whether I've ever desperately rated her as an actress. And so I was a bit, Channing Tatum, guy invites a bunch of girls to an island. I'm not sure I'm on board for this. Yeah, I mean, it felt like what could go wrong? I can see where this can go wrong. And I've seen things that do it better. Bodies, I really enjoyed. Bodies, even. You know, there's been better ideas out there. I'm just going to leave this. And then there's a lot of buzz, a lot of positive feedback. I checked it out. It's tremendous. It's very, very good. It's very subversive. Excellent. And it is quite shocking in its euphemisms for some things that are perhaps depicted in it. I avoided spoilers in the review, and I'm trying to avoid spoilers here. Get it watched. It's tremendous and very,
will do, boss.
Very compelling. No, you can't watch it. You've got plenty of much worse things to watch first. I'm going to send you some Kung Fu.
You've already sent me Kung Fu. Jesus.
There's always more Kung Fu, as you know. Rebel Ridge, I'm going to shout out as well because I loved it. And the feedback is variable on that. Like a lot
I've
of people
liked it.
Come back. You liked it?
Yeah, I liked
it. You watched the trailer?
No.
Yeah, so
no, I only watched it because of your review.
Well, thank you. Some of the feedback has been a bit. I watched the trailer, and you know, it wasn't as actiony as I hoped.
But I don't think it needed to be.
Yes, but
it was good as it was.
If you watch the trailer, you do expect it to be a Liam Neeson film. or a modern version of Rambo, the First Blood, or a TV movie version of season 3 of Reacher. Any one of those is what the trailer's shooting for. The trailer's almost all cut from the second half of the movie, and it goes right the way through to the end. And I would say that I didn't watch the trailer. I knew the director and his pedigree. And I watched the opening scene, which is a guy getting knocked off his bike. And I was like, I am hooked. This is so, so tense. But I didn't expect everyone to start cracking out guns and shooting each other in the faces. And you know, and someone to shout, Adrian. So it was, it's not that kind of movie. So it's just a lesson to not watch trailers, I would say.
Haven't we done a podcast on that?
Yeah,
you don't watch trailers, Kaz.
I watch trailers. Do I?
Or you watch trailers after the film?
Yes, yes, that's what I do. Yes, yes. Yeah, I watch trailer and I go, "Aha, told you so."
So I've got one that isn't on your list.
Oh no! Well, I've got one that isn't on my list too. But yeah, go.
On Prime at the moment, Korean show called May I Help You.
We can't talk about that. We haven't reviewed it, so this is dangerous territory.
But you need to see it.
Okay, you need to review it then.
Well, I don't know if I can review
it. Oh, it's like that. It's
like five words and a number, sir. Words and a number. That's it.
Yeah. Anyone can comment in the forums on the podcast if they want Si to review what he thinks is a great show on Amazon. Okay, go on, tell us.
I really, really enjoyed this show. 16 episodes, about 50 minutes each. I'll give you the basic premise. A young girl, 25-year-old girl, works in a funeral home, and she can speak to the ghosts of the people who have died before they pass over. Okay, that's essentially the premise of it. And if this was anything other than a Korean show, you would think, oh God, what are they going to do with this? It's going to be an iZombie thing. They're saving people. They are finding money. They're whatever. You know, you can imagine the kind of thing that's going to be. It's not. It's a burgeoning love story between two characters that meet each other right at the very beginning. And all the characters you meet throughout the show, they are all intertwined with each other. The story builds. It's a love story. It's a comedy. You can be laughing at this show, and within a second, you can be absolutely bawling your eyes out. Mark, it will destroy you. It is fantastic. Ooh. And I loved every minute of it. And it keeps going all the way through, right up until the very last few minutes, when it explains exactly how and why everything has happened and how it, and why it happened. I loved it. Blimey. I would give it a 10.
Oh my God. Write a review.
As good as Dog Soldiers.
God, write a review and put it in there. This sounds much more Busan than Peninsula. God damn it.
Get in, Mr. Wow. Cross. All right, then.
I think we need a review for this. The fans need to speak, to all our listeners.
Good work.
Well, I don't know whether I can top that, but I'm just going to really, really off the cuff briefly mention that Old Man's coming back. I'm quite flabbergasted by the 10 out of 10. I can't top a 10 out of 10. I'll sling an 8 out of 10 to Jeff Bridges coming back in The Old Man. Love Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, but only 8 out of 10.
Yeah. Yeah, it's only the first episode. Love Jeff Bridges.
The trusty Kaz 8.
Yeah, it's a pretty good score. Love Jeff Bridges. Love John Lithgow. Well on board with this. A lot of problems for the first season. He had cancer, bless him, and got past it. There was COVID, there was writer's strikes, a lot of problems with the first season that basically left a book that was being adapted into a story very unconcluded for its first 7 episodes. Comes back with 8 episodes now, and it feels like it's racing towards an actual conclusion. The first two are odd. They're both set at the same time, and the second episode is terrible watching it after the first. Oddly, because they're both set at the same time, I far preferred watching it the reverse. Watched it the other way around, 2 then 1. And that was much better. It plays much better. And the third is cracking. Always worth watching Jeff Bridges. I'm guessing none of you guys have watched any Old Man, even the first season on Disney?
Nope.
Oh man. Watch the first episode. And watch it for the dogs. He has got the best dogs in it. He's an old man. And he spends the first 5 minutes of the episode getting up every hour to pee in the night. And you just think, oh, my Lord. And
that's my life.
Struggles to put his socks on.
Surely television's escapism.
He struggles to put his socks on. He struggles to do anything. He just has his coffee. And then there's someone in his house. Fantastic. It's really, and if you watch it, it's that first episode, and tell me it isn't great seeing Jeff Bridges, like 70-year-old Jeff Bridges. I think he's more than that, maybe. He's just phenomenal in it.
Your review has got to be more than just saying Jeff Bridges 5 or 10 times.
No, it isn't.
Jeff Bridges.
He contributed all of the acting towards Tron Legacy. I mean, yes, he is capable of a lot.
Yeah. Well,
anyway. Yes.
It's not a 10 out of 10. So frankly, you can get stuffed.
On to our discussion. WorkPrints. WorkPrints.
So, Kaz, what do we mean by a WorkPrint?
What do we mean by WorkPrints? Okay. Well, so in loose terms, you shoot a movie and the filmmakers who made that movie put together a rough cut, often including a lot of things that would later pop up as deleted scenes or later pop up in director's cuts. And this rough cut normally doesn't have all the effects done. It normally doesn't have all of the sound done, including post-production dubbing, which is ADR. So it doesn't seem like normal dubbing because it's lip sync, but it's normally on set sound that they've recorded there. And it's sometimes they use snippets of film scores from other films to give a sense of what the mood should be in key scenes. They cobble this all together so that they can watch it as a filmmaking group and go, what are we going to do to this to get to the finishing line? And the various forms that that can take afterwards are you do a preview cut, which is a version of the work print that is suitable for test audiences, and the test audiences, they give their feedback. And then you take their feedback and you do another version which is closer to the final cut. And then you give it to the MPAA and they'll go, well, we want you to cut far too many heads explode. And you take all those out. And then you come up with the cut that goes to the theatres. Is essentially where we're talking about work prints. But where I think it's the holy grail for movie fans is that really you get to see a movie in its very nascent early stages of existence. And that's not always a good thing. It's not the director's vision, but in situations where the director's vision has been twisted by either he's leaving the project or by censors come in and going, no, you promised us a PG-13. You can't give us something we'd give an NC-17 to. Or other factors come in, like you promised us a 100-minute movie. You've given us a 4-hour cut. I mean, there are a lot of factors that come into play that make work prints interesting for fans who are like, really, it was once that. So that's where I'm at about it being the Holy Grail. Of course, you can't find them. They don't exist. They're bootlegs. But yeah, have you seen any work prints, Mark?
No. I tend to... I'll be honest. The reason why so Kaz and I discussed this is for those 4K and Blu-ray fans who import genre titles from Vinegar Syndrome over in the States, they have a habit of springing some very big surprise titles on purchases for their Black Friday sale. Some of these in the past have been very big, and there is a rumor this year of potentially one of the biggest cult. Do you want to call it a work print? Do you want to call it a director's cut? What have you? We'll come on to that because that's the one I want to talk about. But that's what started this conversation about these things. Now, normally, I don't watch them. I used to, when I got a disc, the first thing I'd go to would be the delete scenes. Because, you know, growing up, you hear about all the mythical ones, the cocoon scene at the end of Alien, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff, which, you know, you desperately want to see. And then you see it and you go, yeah, I'm glad that was cut. So I don't watch deleted scenes anymore. I don't watch alternate endings. It doesn't interest me, that version. However,
there are still a few where the films, exactly as you said, Kaz, the end product has been widely regarded as nowhere near the vision that it was intended to be. Now, if I saw any of those, and there's two in particular that I want to talk about, I'd chew my right arm, I'd chew your right arm off, Kaz.
Are we talking them. Mission Impossible 2 here? We
strangely
are.
No.
We are. I know you are. Yeah.
Strangely no. I mean, you know how much I love. I mean, to be fair, the work print is only 7 more hours of Tom Cruise swishing his hair in slow motion. That's all.
Yeah.
It is. Oh, and doves.
You wish.
And doves. I haven't seen any work. I mean, we've got a list of some to talk about, and I own some of these, but they just don't interest me. They just don't interest me in watching them. I mean, the Blade Runner one. I mean, God, how many more versions of that sodding film can I watch?
It's not the best version. It's an interesting version to watch, but it's
it
not
is
the
interesting. Yeah. It is interesting, but it's not the best, because it's kind of an early amalgamation of the thought processes that went into making the film. There are elements that are good. There are elements that are bad. It's unusual because it's been fully scored and there's fully effects. Everything's working in it, which is why a lot of people say, "Oh, the work print is one of the best," because it's almost a complete film.
Mm.
In fact, it probably is. You can, apart from the quality that it is, it's a terrible quality, but it is essentially a finished film. So you could release that and say, "Yeah, that's fine." But before we started recording, I said to Kaz, it's a curio, because I wonder if that was the print that was released, would it have been quite as highly regarded as it was? Or has the mythos around Blade Runner come about because it was released in a format that they felt needed help? It needed the narration, it needed this, it needed that. And it was the presence of the work prints that was found in somebody's garage or wherever it was. And this is before the internet, and it was going, oh, you know, and it was from that work print that they produced the director's cut, which is supposedly more in tune. It's just an interesting experiment. The final cut is just a far more polished up director's cut, isn't it? There's not much difference in it.
But no, I think you're absolutely right, Sam. And I think these, it's that tease, isn't it? These are the teases for those films where it has been suddenly put out there that, oh yeah, you like it, you think it's good. Yeah, well, you should have seen what it could have been. You should have seen what it should have been. Whoa!
Yeah.
You know, and you're absolutely right. A lot of that, which the mythos, that was exactly the word side. The mythos that builds up around these gets us nerds. Ooh.
Yeah. Our nerds, you're talking about Mission Impossible 2 again, aren't you? So you all keep coming, gravitating back to this idea. What could it have been? Oh man, I feel you, man. I feel you.
Honestly, I'm not right. But you know what I'm going to do? I am going to talk about the one. I'm going to wade in here. I'm going to talk about the one that kickstarted all this off.
Hot
the
target.
Rumor is coming, and it is probably because we've not heard anything more, so it probably is not true. But the rumor was we were finally going to get Michael Mann's director's cut of his 1983. Cult horror classic, The Keep.
Oh no, it's not true then.
Well, I don't know. There was that initial flurry of insiders are saying, and then it's all gone quiet and we're getting a little bit near. But anyway.
What's the studio?
It was Paramount. It was
okay.
A nightmare shoot back in 83. So this is Mann. He's just come off Thief. He's not the man we know today. He's got the cult novel, which is Nazis, a keep in Eastern Europe, cosmic nastiness. Ooh, it's all kinds of craziness.
It's a weird one. It's a weird film.
It's very weird. It was a traumatic shoot back in the autumn of 82 that lasted 13 weeks. It was shot in an abandoned quarry in Wales. Says it all, really. But the problems started in post-production. It was supposed to have a hugely complicated SFX-driven finale. And unfortunately, the SFX director, Wally Vevers, I think, just suddenly dropped dead.
just as they were starting post-production on it all. He left no notes about what was going to be done. There was no crew around him. There was no team that knew what he was going to do. So they hastily added another sort of 9 weeks of reshoots to try and completely pivot the ending into something workable. And originally, where this started, it was rumoured that Mann's original cut was 210 minutes long.
It's not surprising, now, really, for Mann. But
well, exactly.
Now, when he films out of that.
Well, when he presented it to Paramount, they said, "You're having a laugh, aren't you?" They cut it down to 2 hours, which then test screened badly and was ultimately released butchered, in this 95-minute cut that we've got.
Horrendous.
Now, which I love it. I mean, I read the novel when I was really young. I love the story. I love the atmosphere that Mann, because it is beautiful to look at. And what's strange about it is Tangerine Dream did the score, so it's a beautiful ambient electro score that offsets and juxtaposes this brutal, harsh, you know, World War II horror jam. And of course, since it was released, almost on day one, Mann has come out and said, "It's not my film. I can forget that." Now, we all know what Mann's like. You can't keep him out of an edit once he's released a film. Well, he's going to go back and he's, you know, tinkering till the cows come home. He hasn't with this. He's just walked away from it. It's never been released in HD on physical media. Rumour has it because of the rights issues with Tangerine Dream's music, which they are apparently buggers. They've done a few of those. There were some issues with the Legend score and what have you. But the rumours have been growing around, will we ever see what this could and should have been? And this is one film I would love to see, just what it could have been. And what it could have been interminably crap, quite frankly. When you hear 210 minutes, you think, Jesus Christ. I could only just stomach 95 minutes of Ian McKellen's dodgy accent.
Are you telling me that the giant VFX rock giant couldn't have saved Star Trek V? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes.
Because I know in my heart that if they'd have done that, it would have been the best of all the Star Trek movies.
Possibly. But then again, maybe not. So I'm desperate to see the keep is my holy grail of these mythical lost films. So yeah, if Finnegan Syndrome released this, good grief, that's it. Now that's my Christmas come all at once.
That's pretty amazing that they can do that. A little boutique like that can get the backing of Michael Mann to go back and put together a film that he's walked away from.
It's probably the stroking of his ego. It's probably the look. Come on, this is the one film, man. You know, you're getting on in years, Michael. This is the last of your film. You know, do you really want to bow out with this one blot on your landscape?
It's not unprecedented, though, for him recently. I mean, he's always been one to tinker, and he loves different versions. But when they released Black Hat, so Black Hat's Michael Mann, and he had his theatrical cut, and everyone was like mad about it. And then he screened a different version. And by different version, I mean he'd taken key events from like the middle of the movie and from the start of the movie and put them to the middle of the movie. He like switched the narrative pretty significantly to change the entire tone of the first half of the movie, if not the whole of the movie. And I remember, I think Arrow paused their release to go back to him and say, "Look, can we make this happen for the 4K release?" And they eventually stuck it on a Blu-ray, 1080p. But it's a great version to have. And whole-scale change the movie.
And is it called, so I don't own the Black Hat release, is it billed a director's cut, or is it billed as a work print or something else?
That's a genius question.
Because to me, there's differences here, isn't there? There's a director's cut is one thing. I think a lot of these ones we're talking about is something a little bit different. But it'd be really interesting to know how that's billed, because if Mann has gone back and called that a director's cut, then what we might end up with the keep, if it ever does, is it might be his director's cut. We don't know.
Well, I mean, if it helps, I've called it a director's cut in my review, which makes it fact because that review is published.
Because you wrote it.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. So I mean, that seems like the director's cut. Yeah.
I mean, the other one for me is the infamously troubled Alien 3. Now, I know that we got the assembly cut on the quadrilogy, and that's the one which, frankly, should be everyone's preferred version because it is better. But it is infamously not Fincher's cut. He has steadfastly refused to endorse it. It is called the assembly cut. And, of course, there are grumblings then of, well, if that's not Fincher's version, what was Fincher's version? What was it going to be? It's, again, like you said, Si, it's a tantalizing tease of what could have been. And I think, you know, when you hear the painful production that it went through, the constant script rewrites, we all know about the Vincent Ward Wooden Monk Planet version. We all know about the William Gibson version. So I think ultimately, if we were ever going to get a work print that showed us what Fincher's version was going to be, I don't think it's going to radically change the assembly cut. I don't think we're going to see minutes and minutes and minutes of footage that wasn't included. I think what we'd see is a different edit of what we've got. Maybe some alternate cues, maybe some alternate shots, but I don't think it would be the singular, you know, radically different version from a lot of the ones that we're talking about here. But again, I'd love to see it. I've lived with that film for 30-odd years. I want to see. And again, it's because Fincher just has gone, I'm not having any of it. That's it. Yeah. I'm not even going to talk about that bloody nightmare. You just want to see, God, well, what could it have been?
Well, to be fair, I mean, I'm quite happy with the assembly cut on that being vastly superior to the theatrical version and being, to me, a very good movie. So I'm okay with the status of that. And a bit like Pat Garrett, I feel like this is the best we're going to get. I don't know whether I believe that Fincher in 2024 could go back to the footage and go, this is what I originally intended, and give it to us in a shape that is better than...
Yeah, he's too old. He's a different person than he was back then.
Yeah.
It would never be the same. It would be how he interprets the material now rather than what it was back then.
Yeah. So Peckinpah for Pat Garrett never did a finished version. He sent off a couple of preview cuts, these ones pulled from the work print, sent them off, and that's what you get on the latest 4K release. And they're in really good shape, but they're preview cuts. They're kind of, let's test this before audiences. And the two are different. Mm-hmm. And someone has gone back into all of his notes and tried to put together what they think he would have released as his movie. But there's some seismic jumps to get to, if I was Sam Peckinpah making a movie, this is what it would look like. Yes. That's a lot. That's a lot of
you
brass.
You need 10 years of cocaine to be able to do that.
But it's probably the best we're ever going to get. I mean, particularly with the Peckinpah situation. My favorite example, I mean, there are plenty of examples in here. I've seen Albert Pion's slinger cut of Cyborg, which is comedy value because it's not even Van Damme's voice. So as much as I like some of the actual scenes in it, I can't watch it. It's like someone's just taken it and turned it into a parody, which it already probably was in some sense. But I mean, like, I love Cyborg, and I can't handle that it's not Van Damme's voice. It's terrible dubbing. I remember seeing a work print of Hulk, Ang Lee's Hulk, which had some previous scenes, but what I was memorable about it was that the score to it was largely Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Sounds insane, but some of the desert-based battles with the Hulk running and jumping across the desert set to the music from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
It could have worked.
Yeah, it was kind of a very nice, it gave it a very interesting and very Ang Lee flavor, which I'd say that the finished film doesn't really have. But my favorite of all of the examples is Hard Target, which after...
Not Mission Impossible 2.
I've never seen that. There's reportedly a 3.5-hour cut of Mission Impossible 2. They cut out all the violence because obviously it's like PG-13. You know, he it was supposed to be a John Woo film. He must have felt very frustrated by that process, although I have no idea why he thought he would get anything else out of a Mission Impossible movie. But maybe back then he saw Brian De Palma, a traditionally adult, you know, he makes grown-up movies like Carlito's Way, like Scarface, and he's gonna, and horror movies. And I mean, these are not movies that are 12s and PGs. And he saw that Brian De Palma did a Mission Impossible movie, and he went, I can do Mission Impossible 2, and I can have everybody shoot each other 150 times.
Hair and doves.
Yeah, so 3.5 hours of Tom Cruise, two pistols, hair and doves, shooting everybody wildly. And the end version we get, is a couple of hours long. What happened in that extra hour and a half? Because I would love to see that. Possibly more so than the 4-hour cut of Spinal Tap, although I am interested. But Hard Target. So after our conversation, Mark, I went out and imported this absolutely ridiculous German release of Hard Target. Okay, like four discs. I already own it on UK and US. But this one, I imported it because it includes the work print. And in Hard Target's interesting because it's a 95-minute movie without credits. And it had a sneak peek preview that was shown to test audiences that was 2 hours long. And that's on a French, I think, or Italian release. I nearly got that. Half the price than this big box of card. But no, this one includes the 2 hour and 10 minute work print. I know. And the greatest thing about it is it's even worse quality than the sneak peek. But it's 10 minutes longer. It's fantastic. Anyway, I got it on and I watched it first day on a big TV. I mean, it would be better to watch on my phone. But anyway, it was watchable and it was a delight. It basically, if you imagine watching RoboCop before they put the extra few seconds of Ed 209 unloading into the guy in that infamous scene, if you imagine that for most of the action sequences in Hard Target, basically everybody gets shot at least 2 to 3 times as much. Wu has no control on the concept of how many bullets are in a single Beretta pistol at any one time. Okay. I think in one scene, Van Damme does get some extended bullet clips. Yeah, he pulls them off some guy and they look a little bit longer than the normal ones. So, right, rather than 15 bullets, these ones have 20 in it. He's firing 50 shots each. There's no time for reloading.
Love it.
I think in one scene, he shoots someone with both guns, like must be around 50 times, and then he kicks him in slow motion, and then he shoots him some more. It's just so this is a thoroughly excessive cut. And there are actually story additions in there, which were quite interesting to see. An entire love story is put in. There's a scene with Wilford Brimley where they dance, him and Chance, when they reunite. He's like, Cajun uncle, and they meet up in the middle of the woods somewhere, and he's like, oh, chance, and this one they do like Alouette and do a little dance together in slow motion, and I'm like, John Woo, what are you doing? And Arnold Vosloo, who's the tracker, has got almost psychic abilities, so when he tracks them, the camera shows him staring at into the distance and then pivots to show nothing and then a faded image of like Van Damme and the girl running off as if he's like imagining where they ran. They obviously thought that's too sci-fi for this, but
so will it be your preferred version then, Cass?
Oh, God, no, never. Never. Not a chance. Also for Hard Target, which I've got in 4K, I've got in 4K with reverse sound, which also, for that matter, flickers, because I think it was a keynote. And then I've got it in 4K with corrected sound, which flickers. And I got it in 4K in the UK, which is corrected sound and doesn't flicker. It's great. I've got loads of different 4K versions, plus the German 4K version. I'll never watch this again. This is in like 144p. It's like okay, it's really quite bad
Oh.
quality. You have to have your brain has to have watched the film enough times that you can fill in the pixels, a bit like AI, whilst you're watching it. So
To bring this puppy home then, Kaz, is the moral of all this that
find all the work prints you can.
while these work prints we lust after, we desperately want, and in your case, spend an inordinate amount of very foolish money trying to secure, yet inevitably they are an inferior product to the one we know, love, and already own?
But
Is
more
that the moral
bullets,
of the
more
story, Kaz?
no, more no. A John Woo film where more bullets get fired is better. Okay? I will never regret for the first time in my life, like legitimately owning Hard Target work print. I'm delighted by that. No one
Nice.
in my entire life is going to ever see it, and I probably won't watch it again, but I'm very
You can
happy.
go to your grave
Yeah,
knowing that you have
knowing,
seen it.
yes, that I
Nice.
sold my car to buy an import this
Peace of
work print.
mind, Kaz. You must sleep like a baby every night.
Yeah, no.
Oh,
Oh, awesome. Well, I think that's it. I think that's,
done.
yes, I think it is. Do let us know if there's anything we've not covered, any work prints
What are
we
your
don't know
favorite
about.
work prints? Yeah, let
What
us
am I?
know what work prints you've seen
Yes. What? Yeah. What?
and
Let's.
was it
How
better?
poor? How poor they were. Yeah. And is there the existence of a single? Well, we did say Alien though. But anyway, let us know if there's any that we haven't covered. Let us know if you want Sai to review that TV show that he'd give a
I
10 out
do.
of 10 to. Let me know if you want me to write a review of the Hard Target work print. If
I do.
you know, no, don't you don't let me know. Anyway, thank you very much. If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a like and subscribe to the channel. Plus, hit the notification bell so you don't miss out when we publish our live streams, product reviews, and more. If you really like the podcast, then buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/avforums. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and bookmark avforums.com for the latest reviews, news, and videos. Plus, why not give us a 5-star rating on whichever service you use, if they allow it, but only if you enjoyed the show. Thank you for watching and listening, and join us for another podcast soon, real soon.
It's all.
Au
Bye.
revoir.